In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
That's right. It's time to pass the popcorn. Brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10. They have a film for everyone in the family. 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Alan Adams from The Main Edge with us in studio. So much to talk about, Alan, in addition to the movies. You were off at the wedding of our good friend Tim Bissell this weekend. And
I was.
Should I bring it up?
No, I think it's important that we talk about it.
Alan, you were in the wedding party.
I was one of Tim's groomsmen. I was honored to be asked. It was one of those things. Like, Tim and I have been friends for a very long time. We were coworkers for a long stretch. We did time in the focus group together.
Did time. You make it sound like,
I know, right?
Like prison.
Did a hitch. Back in June, Tim asked me to be in his wedding party, and I happily accepted. But it's always been a little weird, just because, for instance, they chose to have the bachelor party on literally the one day in the summer where I was unable to attend. So I wasn't able to be part of the bachelor party. We came together and we went down to Happy Valley Camp in Freedom, Maine, a lovely place, by the way.
I said it was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, gorgeous. We went down on Friday night for the rehearsal dinner, helped set up the venue a little bit. There was a brick oven and Tim made pizzas for everybody. Oh. And it was really nice. And we hung out, and then, there had been some concern about the groomsmen outfits. They had been custom tailored and altered and whatnot. And so as we were getting ready to head back to Bangor Friday night, Tim says, "Hey, why don't you take your stuff home and try it on and make sure everything fits okay, and be ready to have some sort of other, alternative in case something goes awry." And I'm like, "Okay, great." Take stuff home. Get home that night. 9 o'clock, whatever. Try everything on. Everything fits fine. Everything.
Perfect.
We're good to go. Everything's great. We get up and going Saturday morning, aiming to get to the camp at around 1 o'clock. It's about an hour away from here. So we pack up our stuff, pack our bags, because one of the deals was they rented cabins, and so some people were going to stay the night. Sheridan and I weren't sure if we were going to stay or not, and so we packed our bags just in case. Figured we would if we'd make a game time decision. Climbed into the car and headed out. Like, went, did the Starbucks drive through, stopped at a Dice Arts to get like sandwiches and stuff on the way, and have a beautiful drive going out that way, just gorgeous. So we drive, we get there. We're a little bit behind schedule. It's almost 1:30 when we sort of turn down the dirt road that leads down to the camp. And we just crest this hill, and you see this big blue sign that says, "Welcome to Happy Valley Camp," Hidden Valley Camp. And at that moment, it dawned on me that my groomsmen gear that fit so well was still hanging in my closet in our house back in Bangor.
An hour away.
Rich, I have never felt like a worse human being than I felt at that moment. I literally was like, I've ruined this. I've ruined their wedding. I don't know what to do. I flipped out. Like, I've never had a panic like that. Like the pit of the stomach, and just like starting to sweat, like crying, just like, oh my God, how could I possibly have done this to my friend? And so we pull a Yui and we start racing back towards Bangor and frantically calling anyone and everyone we can think of who might be available to go to our house, get our stuff, get the stuff, and meet us somewhere.
Right.
And happily, we came upon somebody. One of Sheridan's friends, Jesse, was free. She goes into our house, braves our dog, who doesn't really know who she is. Goes up, grabs the stuff out of the closet, screeches out of there, meets us at Dice Arts. Sheridan changes in the back seat while we're waiting for Jesse to get there. Jesse arrives. We get in the car, tear off, and I start changing in the car in an effort to be ready. The wedding is set to start at 3 o'clock. According to the internet, our ETA is roughly 3:15. So I'm telling Tim this, and bless his heart, man. Tim Bissell it was just like, no worries. Everything's going to be fine. We're all set here. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm the worst person ever. Please tell Casey I'm so very, very sorry. And he's like, oh, we haven't told Casey. No, they stalled. Like, they were like, oh yeah, people are having trouble finding parking spaces. Like, people wanted to get to the venue. Like, she did not know that I was not there. And so I got there, I screech up, the golf cart takes me, like, there's a guy waiting at the golf cart, like, we zoom down, I get into line, we go, we line up. It's an absolutely beautiful ceremony. Like, they have a wonderful time. And as we're getting ready to take the pictures, Casey comes up and gives me a hug and says, I hear there were some problems. and I'm like, yeah, I'm so sorry. She's like, you know, now it's a funny story.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
it all worked out in the end and everything was fine. I was convinced that nobody was ever going to want to talk to me ever again, but it was a very low-key affair. There was plenty of good-natured ribbing for the rest of the evening, which I would expect nothing less. But happily, Tim and Casey wedded bliss. The lovely couple is actually touched down in California for their honeymoon today, and I did not, in fact, ruin their wedding.
I saw it. When I saw your Facebook post, I actually did one of the audible.
Yeah, no, it was something. But happily, they are a forgiving pair, and I imagine that I will still be friends with them once they return.
Were all speed laws obeyed?
Yeah.
Why do I? You mentioned the golf cart. Why do I picture it being like that time when the Red Sox got Doug Mirabelli? An escort from Logan Airport to be able to catch Tim Wakefield.
It was very, I imagine it was very similar, yes.
But you made it.
I did. I did make it, and it was a wonderful time was had by all, and many congratulations to Tim and Casey.
Absolutely. I also hear from my wife that after the wedding couple, the star of the show was a pig by the name of Hamilton.
Oh my God. So there's a pot-bellied pig named Hamilton just like wandering around the grounds of the camp. I've never seen anything like it.
Abby wanted to bring him home.
I don't blame her. Like, it was like the pig wags his tail.
No.
Like, wags his tail like a dog. Wow. Like, I've never seen anything. And it's just like, and there are llamas. And then there's this little tiny white dog named, I believe the name was Hanky Panky that hung out with Hamilton. You know, like, significantly smaller than the pig, but they like hung out and are friends, and it's just like, it's like a freaking Disney movie over there, and it's fantastic. Like, it was like, if you know, if I ever A, have kids, and B, win the lottery, I will send them there for camp.
Well, there you go. Alan's Wedding Odyssey here on Downtown. Now back to movies, and we know you loved it. You talked about it a little last week. Apparently, you and the rest of the planet, what a weekend for the movie.
It's pretty astonishing, right? Like, they basically doubled projections. Like, they were talking about 65 million, and that would have been a record number for a horror movie, record number for a September release. Like, that was a huge number. And for them to basically go up and be like, yeah, you know, it's like, oh, 65 million, that would break all these records. And Pennywise says, hold my beer. And the next thing you know, like, they pull, I think it was
117.
Yeah, the final number was like right around $115-$120 million. It's just an astonishing box office performance for a movie. I might add that, and I made mention of this, there have been some excellent films made from Stephen King properties.
Yes.
However, it's been a while since there's been one of those real sort of instant classic feeling. You know, you look back at stuff like, you know, at Misery and Shawshank and even the Green Mile, The Shining. Like, these are all movies that came out, you know, 20 years ago.
Right.
I would submit that it is the best adaptation of a Stephen King novel that we've seen in the 21st century. I feel like that's a fair assessment, all things considered. And there's been a lot, like, whether you're talking about the TV stuff or movies or what have you, but this movie just managed to capture in a wonderful way what made the book such a beloved thing. Because when you ask Stephen King fans what their favorites are, it's always on the list. Like, you know, it's, you know, maybe it's your favorite. Maybe, you know, like for someone like me, like I love The Stand or maybe The Shining or something like that. But it's in that conversation. And I think it's that way for everybody. Like it's probably one of the least divisive in terms of fandom as far as his books are concerned. And so for them to find a way to both bring that story to life and do so in such a way that is true to the spirit of the story while still making the adjustments necessary to make it work cinematically is no small feat. And especially when you're talking about a story that really is two halves, and to make one half feel self-contained the way they did was just remarkable. Andrew Marchetti, I think, is the director's name. He did the horror movie Mama a few years ago that was so very good. It's the sort of story that, yes, there are scares. It's both atmospheric scares and plenty of jump scares. And they do that thing where stuff moves like too slow and then super fast and then too slow and super fast and gets all skittery and freaks me out. It's one of the scariest things for me on a screen is to see that sort of fast, slow kind of movement, which they did that wonderfully. Again, scary movie, but the key to what makes it so good is the heart of the matter, the performances. I don't know how they found like half a dozen. Like, it's hard enough to find one strong child actor. They found six, and like all of these kids were fantastic, like from top to bottom. You know, the young girl who played Bev was very good. The kid who played Bill was excellent. I think the highlight for just about everybody was Finn Wolfhard, who played the trash mouthed Richie Tozier with such glee. Like, it was just one of those things where it's like,
and he's the kid from Stranger Things,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. He's I think Mikey from like the lead kid from Stranger Things. He's just phenomenal. Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise, like, holy crap. You know, to go in and take on a role that was rendered so iconically, because Tim Curry's Pennywise is one of those things, like, kids of a certain age, like, that's like that clown still haunts their dreams. And so to fill those shoes is not an easy task. And Skarsgård made it his own. Like, he didn't try to, you know, to reinvent the, you know, to do what Tim Curry did. Like, he brought his own weird, creepy vibe to the thing, and it was there was a wonderful air of menace to the whole thing that was just delightful. And then you throw in the fact that it's a late 80s period piece, and it's not so much that I loved it. It's surprising that I can, you know, not talk about it constantly.
And one of the reasons I love the book, like so many others around here, is because I know those places. And
yeah.
And I understand that the filmmakers did a great job of evoking Bangor.
Well, it was remarkable.
I'm sorry, Derry.
Yes. My wife and I talked about this, actually, and Sheridan referred to it as almost an alternate universe Bangor. Like, it looks nothing like Bangor, and yet it looks exactly like Bangor. It's hard to explain, but, like, you know, seeing the kids ride down the streets, it's like, yeah, no, that looks like Bangor, even though I've never seen that place before in my life. You know, and like places like the Barrens, you know, and all those places, it's like, yes, they were familiar without being identical. And I think that was part of what made the movie work so well, certainly for audiences around here. But also, like, I mean, I think just for audiences in general, that sense of place was so strong.
I thought the decision to move it to the 80s instead of the 50s was a great move on the part of the director, screenwriter, whoever made that decision to move the setting from the 50s.
Yes, I think that was absolutely the right move because, you know, because I think it's really important to have the adult portion of that story happen in the present day.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's really vital. And so just, you know, adjusting the timeline, you know, you wind up set in the late 80s, which is really convenient because there's all sorts of wonderful sort of pop culture detritus floating around from that period. And so you're allowed to kind of, you incorporate that in with the kids. And it's still, you know, it's still far enough in the past where it's not like, you know, where kids aren't all consumed by video games. You know, nobody has cell phones, like computers and the internet aren't really a thing yet. And so, you know, it obviously it's more modern, but still, like, you know, in point of fact, it's not that different from the childhood of the 1950s. Mm-hmm. Whereas if it was even, you know, 5 years or 10 years farther down, like, it completely changes the dynamic. So I think they did a masterful job. And despite the fact that I read today, actually, that there has not been an official green light on the second part yet.
Wow.
Which is a start. And it's the take that I read was basically, well, they're just, you know, they're just waiting to, you know, to sleep off their champagne hangovers before they push the button and make things happen. But yeah, it was a phenomenal movie. If by some chance you haven't seen it yet, go on ahead and check it out, because especially if you live around here or grew up around here, like, there's going to be a lot that you're going to see that you're really, really going
to
like.
Well, I haven't seen it yet and I want to, but it sounds like I've got some time, because I expect this will be in the theaters for a while.
Yeah, this movie's not going anywhere.
Well, that's fantastic. Alan Adams telling you all about it here on Downtown. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
Thanks for having your clothes here with you this time.
The worst.
No.
And yes, absolutely the right call to not tell the bride about the until after the fact.
Yeah.
Whoever made that decision, right decision.
Yep. Well done.
Though, you have a moment?
Sure.
While we're here in time, and you mentioned getting emotional and things like that, and when you realized the trouble you might be causing, I heard that our friend Tim got a little got a little choked up too during the ceremony.
He did, and it's funny because there's a general happy go lucky goofiness about Tim Bissell that
but with a heart of gold.
Of course, but that permeates pretty much everything he does, and so to see him sort of impacted in that kind of emotional way was surprising, and it was really sweet. You know, they. The two of them they've been together for such a long time, and they're so very much in love. They're such a wonderful pair that it was really wonderful to see them sort of make it official, as they say.
Yeah.
I think he was really I don't think he anticipated how much this was going to make him feel. Because again, it's Tim, you know, it's
and you like, never do. Did you got choked up at yours?
I was a mess.
I was that way at mine. Carrie, did you get all emotional at your wedding?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't, it's hard not to.
Yeah.
I mean,
if you don't, you might want to wonder if this was the right decision. Yeah. But yeah, people didn't maybe expect it from Tim, but yeah, I heard it was very sweet.
Yes. It was lovely. It was wonderful to see them together. And then, and then there was a taco bar.
Boom.
And you can't go wrong with a taco bar.
Also makes me wonder, I don't think Tim's going to be on the show this week. He's not going to do the three-pint stance from his honeymoon for crying out loud.
I would go ahead and say you should probably plan on him. I will say, and I know I'm kind of blathering on and all that, but one thing that happened, we talked a little bit about this off air, and it was one of the few sort of negative moments that I felt over the, you know, in the course of this whole thing. During the toasts, we're sitting there. Tim's brother was the best man. He was giving a toast. Casey's sister Heather was the matron of honor. She did a toast, and they're in the process of giving their toasts. And at the other end of the hall, there are people like full voice, like talking. Like conversations, and it's like, and it's this big sort of hall, so it's like the sound is echoing, and so like it's literally like it's distracting. Like you can literally hear what the noise that these people are making, to the point where one of the other groomsmen actually goes down to them and is like, the toasts are happening, maybe shut your mouths. And
wow.
And which, you know, and it's like, and he was upset, I think. And I was kind of too. I would have really liked to hear all this stuff. But the thing about it was, they still didn't.
Jeez.
And it's like, come on, people, like, act like you've been somewhere.
Right.
You know, have a little bit of respect. That said, the toasts were beautiful.
Do you know who these people were? Were they?
I don't
know. Maybe they weren't even supposed to be at the wedding. Maybe they just stumbled upon the party and said, let's hang out.
Yeah, they just wandered the some sort of wet, hot American summer situation, right, where they just wander into the camp.
Booze in a taco bar, and there they were. Man, oh, man.
Which, I mean, don't get me wrong. You throw words like booze and taco bar around, and I'm probably going to cause some problems myself.
Question about that. We call that Wednesdays here on Downtown.